Morning. Today's daf in Bavim Tzir is Lamed Beis. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. We are on Lamed Alpha Lamed Beis. We are at the two dots, and we're beginning this morning with the heading of the Mishnah: No Sein Lo Schara Kapoa Bato. Okay. Let me reread the heading. Hayabato Manasela Lo Yama Lo Tainli Sela Ela No Sein Lo Schara Kapoa. Okay. Back at the Mishnah, we were discussing was a simple question of whether or not you can demand any kind of reimbursement. You're going to be taking time out of your day in order to do the mitzvah of a Shavas Aveda, and that by definition means that you're going to have a loss of time. Loss of time equals loss of money. Now, obviously, context is very important. Are you in the middle of working or are you not in the middle of working? So the Gemara doesn't actually spell that out. The Rishonim do discuss that. But in the meantime, however, the Mishnah says very clearly that you can expect some sort of compensation. It's just a question of what kind of compensation are you entitled to receive. So in the Mishnah, which the Gemara just quoted, so if let's say you lost a seller's worth of work, so you can't demand a seller, that's too much, but you can ask for something nominal. You can ask elanosin lo scharo kepoa. The Mishnah says that you're going to be able to ask for the amount of a wage of a worker. Exactly what that means. So we get to see the Gemara right now. So the Gemara says, "No sin lo schara kepoa bato." Okay. So the Gemara quotes a Braisa, and the Braisa adds one word to the Mishnah, and that is that what you can demand for is money of a worker who is bato, who is not going to be working. What does that mean? Take a look at Rashi over here. Right? Rashi writes, "My kepoa bato, v'alo eino." Now, obviously, you're not totally idle. In other words, you're still helping the person return his lost item.
But that's not his job.
So basically, Rashi gives some sort of basic formula in terms of how much money you can demand, and that is the following. Let's say you're working, and obviously that means that you're actually working in order to make a living, and your employer gives you an option. You know, either you can work and I'll give you this much money, or I'll tell you what, take some time off and I'll give you this much money. Obviously something. Obviously nothing close to what you would get for actually working. So, how much money would you accept for not working? Obviously it's going to be a small amount of money, whatever that is. It's a basic formula to try to get you to the idea of how much you can expect to be paid.
If you're unemployed, you're not getting anything, right?
Well, presumably. Now, my kapo bato, so the Gemara says, now what does that mean? Amar Abayi, kapo bato sho'osa malacha de bato mina. So the Gemara over here quotes Abayi, and Abayi is a little bit more specific in terms of how to put together this formula. Rashi goes on to explain, kama adam rotza lito v'livchos mischaro livato mi malacha zuk veda shu'osek ba v'asuk ba malacha kalakazu. So Abayi says, no, not like what we said earlier. What we said earlier is, how much would you accept to pay to do nothing? So Rashi says no. I'm in explanation of Abaye. Really, it's Abaye saying no. Abaye says no. What the formula is that right now you're doing hard work and you're getting paid X. What would you accept in order to do much lighter work in order to get paid Y? In other words, X minus. So the Gemara says that really is going to be the adjusted formula for how much you should be expected to make. Now, obviously, in Abaye's example, it's going to be a little bit more money than what the Gemara said. The Gemara said, just simply, you're not working whatsoever. Obviously, what a person's ready to accept as payment for not working whatsoever, obviously, is a very small amount. Over here, you are working, meaning you're doing the mitzvah of Shavas Aveda. So you're doing some sort of labor. So therefore, the formula is how much would you be ready to accept in order to get paid just a little bit less than that. Okay. And one more thing in the Mishnah that we're going to be discussing in the Gemara, and that is in Yesham based on Masna Bifneim. Now, let's say you're ready to do the mitzvah of Shavas Aveda, however, it's going to cost you. In other words, right now you're in the middle of work. And what you would like now is full compensation. So, if there at the time is a Beis Din, so you can make a stipulation with Beis Din, I'm going to do this, but only under the consideration, only under the terms in which I'm going to get full compensation. And you make such a tanya in front of Beis Din, and the Mishnah says it is an effective tanya. And then the Gemara went on to, I'm sorry, the Mishnah went on to say at the very end, and oh, by the way, if you can't find a Beis Din and you're not ready to lose all those wages, you don't have to. Meaning the Mishnah says, Shelcha Kodem, that your financial responsibility for you and your family come before others. So you don't have to give up money in order to do the mitzvah of a Shavuot Aveda. That's what we learned at the end of the Mishnah.
So if he goes in front of the court, the recipient of a lost object must pay him?
Sounds
or,
so,
if he doesn't want to pay him, what a guy does.
It certainly sounds that
way.
You're right.
Back,
certainly sounds, it sounds that way. Sounds that way. Now, Isavar Safar Avid Iska Bahade Adade. The Gemara tells a story, and the point of the story, obviously, is that it will somehow connect with our Mishnah. The Gemara says that Isser is his name, together with Rav Safar, had a business together. Also, Rav Safar Palagle Below Date de Isser. Ba'ape Beitre. And so, Rav Safra now, in a partnership with Safra, Rav Safra in a partnership with Isser, now go ahead and liquidate the partnership. Now, in a liquidation, so obviously they were 50% partners, so each one of them is entitled to 50% of whatever the assets were in the business. And so Rav Safra now liquidated, and Isser wasn't there at the time, but he had two witnesses. So the two witnesses there were to verify that the liquidation was fair and that Rav Safra only took 50% of the assets.
You don't have to agree to liquidate?
It's coming, that discussion's coming up in Baba Basra. I know for sure. In terms of...
One can buy the other shares.
Right. So it's for sure coming up. The also come in the Rabba Baravuna Amale Zil Isaac Flas the Paka Kamayu. So they go to Rabba Ravuna and Isser was enraged. Meaning, wait one second. You liquidated without me, and how do I know that you took only 50% of the assets of the business? How do I know?
So witnesses?
Huh?
Didn't he have witnesses there?
So he had two witnesses. Rabbi Ravuna says to Rav Safra, here's what you're going to do. You're going to bring now the Beis Din that you liquidated in front of. Meaning, Rabbi Ravuna was clearly of the opinion that it's not enough to do it just in front of two witnesses, but rather the liquidation has to be done in front of a Beis Din. For reasons which we're about to articulate. Inami, the Gemara says, or if you want, trade me goats lasso. Meaning, if two of the three members of the judges were to come forward, that's also fine. Meaning, because I just need to know that it was done in front of a court. And so, if two people of the court come forward, that's going to be enough as well. And Rashi points out that those two are going to be testifying about the basin that they were a part of. Or if you want, you can bring two witnesses that are going to testify that you liquidated in front of a court, meaning it doesn't have to be the actual members of the court as well. I just need to know that you did in front of a court. So, Rava Bar Ravuna clearly is of the opinion that what Rav Safra did was wrong in that he liquidated, but he didn't liquidate in front of a court. He only liquidated in front of two witnesses, and that's simply not enough. So, Amalei Manalacha. So, Rav Safra turns to Rava Bar Ravuna and says, well, where did you get that from? Meaning, I liquidated the business in front of two witnesses, and you're claiming that I need to do it in front of a Beis Din, and how did you arrive at that conclusion? So Amalei Danan. So Rava Bar Ravuna says, what do you mean, how did I arrive at that conclusion? Our Mishnah. Look what happened in our Mishnah. In our Mishnah, so the person wanted to do the mitzvah of Shavuot Aveda. However, he would be looking at a serious, significant financial loss if he were to do that. So therefore, he went to the Beis Din and he said to the Beis Din, I'm only going to do the mitzvah of Shavuot Aveda if I'm going to get full reimbursement for all the wages that I'm going to lose. So, in order to come to some sort of financial agreement with another party, it must be done in front of a Beis Din. And just doing it in front of two witnesses is not going to be sufficient. This is how Rava Bar Ravuna arrived at the conclusion that over here, when Rav Safra liquidated the business, he needed to do it in front of a Beis Din, and doing it in front of two witnesses is simply insufficient. Amar Lei. To which now Rav Safra says back to Rava Bar Ravuna, no, I don't think you're right. Midami. In fact, the comparison is not a fair comparison. I don't understand. There, in our meaning here in our Mishnah, we are discussing a case of I'm going to extract money from you to give to me. So there we're talking about extraction of money. So there I can only do it if stipulated in front of Beis Din. Avahacha didei shakli gilui milsabamahu betray sagile. But over here we're talking about my business, meaning I'm a 50% owner in this business, and it's mine, at least 50% of it. So all we're doing now is liquidating the business, and I'm taking what is rightfully mine. So this is not a case where I need a Beis Din. This is just simply a case where I need verification that what I did is honest and upright. Two witnesses is all you need. Teda. And then Rav Safra piles on over here and he says, and I am right, and I'm telling you I'm right, because consider the following. Let's say I have a widow who's looking to collect her ksuva, so she can collect her ksuva shelo bifnei Beis Din. She doesn't need a Beis Din in order to collect her ksuva. All she needs is, presumably, two witnesses just to simply validate that what she's taking is rightfully hers. Because it's a ksuva, which means that she's entitled to it. It's just now a question of gilui milsa, knowing that what she did was right and upstanding. But she doesn't need a Beis Din if what she's taking is rightfully hers. Rav Safra is making the exact same argument. What I'm taking is 50% of what is rightfully mine, so therefore I don't need a Beis Din. Ad kan, that, well, not yet, yeah, there's one more point to be made, but this now seems to be a very compelling argument to Rav Safra that he did not need a Beis Din, unlike the ruling of Rava Baravuna. So Amalei Abai V'la Mi'it Mar La Amar Rav Yosef Bar Min Yomi Amar Rav Nachum Na'aman Ein Etzricha Beis Din Shel Mumchen Aval Tzricha Beis Din Shel Hedyotos. To which the Gemara now finally countered by saying, wait one second, in the case of the Amana, it's true you don't need a Beis Din, but there is another comment made on that Mishnah, made in the name of Rav Nachman. You don't need a Beis Din Mumchen, you don't need a certified court made up of certified members of Beis Din, but you do need a Beis Din. You don't need a qualified Beis Din, but you need some semblance of a Beis Din. You do need three people. So even if they're Shel Hadyotos, even if they are not certified, not qualified, but you need some form of a Beis Din. That's the only leniency applied to the Amana. So now, truth be told, is that the argument no longer stands. Meaning, the argument that Rav Safra was making was, you see that the Amana can collect even if there's no Beis Din. Now the Gemara is pointing out, that's not perfectly accurate. You do need a Beis Din, just not Mumchen, you just need Hedyotos, but you do need a Beis Din. So the Gemara, I don't know if the Gemara is totally upending Rav Safra's point. The Gemara is just simply saying that that is not going to be a proof towards Rav Safra's point. Okay, so finishing up the last Mishnah, the last Sugya. So two points to take into consideration, which we just learned together. Number one, when you are doing the mitzvah of Shavas Aveda and it is going to require you to lose work, so what kind of reimbursement are you entitled to? So the Gemara says, Kesocher Batel. The Brisa says, basically, how much would a person accept as payment for not working altogether? Abaye qualifies, no. How much would a person accept payment for doing a lighter and easier job than that of a more difficult job? And then the last point the Gemara went over was when making a contractual agreement with another person and the other person is not there, so do I need to do it in front of a Beis Din? From our Mishnah, the answer seems to be yes. And the Gemara discussed that in the context of liquidating a partnership. Do I need to liquidate in front of a Beis Din? Rav Safra was arguing no. Rav Abiravuna says no, you have to do it in front of a Beis Din.
By the way, in response to that exact question, mm-hmm. there's a note that says it was at the end of a partnership. It did it at the end of the term of the partnership.
Oh, in other words, it was expected to be liquidated.
So that's when it did it.
Okay.
So it didn't have
to. In other words, you can't force liquidation.
Right.
Okay. Okay.
Otherwise, we need both.
Good. Okay. Matzah Berefes. Okay, we are finishing up now the second parak of Bamitzia. There's just a couple more days to go. And our Mishnah now is going to make a point which seems to be, at this stage of the second parak of Bamitzia, very obvious. The Mishnah says, Matzah Berefes. If, let's say, you find an animal in a barn, so ain chayav ba. You're not responsible, meaning it's not a lost animal, it's in a barn. In fact, at this point in time, the Gemara is going to ask this question. Seems to be pretty obvious, meaning the animal is penned up in a barn. Of course, you don't have to do the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. Stay tuned, the Gemara is going to discuss. But if you find the animal wandering in the street, so then you're obligated to return the animal to its rightful owner. Okay, these first two points of the Mishnah seem to be extraordinarily obvious. And not only that, but these two points of the Mishnah are painting extremes. Meaning, we would know what would happen if you find an animal in somebody's barn. And we should know what happens when you find the animal wandering in the street. Meaning, the Mishnah should be finding some sort of more nuanced, subtle scenario in which we're not sure if the animal is lost or not lost. Again, stay tuned, the Gemara is going to be discussing. Now let's say the animal is lost, but the animal is wandering in a cemetery, and you are a Kohen. Can you, as a Kohen, violate your Isser of not coming to contact with a dead in order to perform the mitzvah of a Shavuot Aveda? Says the Mishnah, no. You can't. You have to remain outside of the cemetery, even though it's going to be missing up on the opportunity of the mitzvah of Shavuot Aveda. Im Amar Lo, it's common sense, by the way, you'll find a non-Kohen. Yeah, right. So as a common sense point, you'll find somebody else and you'll tell somebody else, but you yourself are not obligated. Im Amar Lo Avivitamei Osha Amar Lo Ataksir Lo Yishmalo. Now, let's say your father gives you instructions to the contrary of the Torah. The father tells you that you, even though the father's a Kohen, and that means you're a Kohen as well, so he tells you, I want you to violate the Torah in order to perform this mitzvah. So the Mishnah says, you don't listen to him. Or let's say dad tells you, and just in general, I know there's a mitzvah of a Shavuot Aveda, I don't want you to do it. So, al yishmalo, lo yishmalo, so the Mishnah teaches us that under these circumstances, you don't listen to your father. Stay tuned, the Gemara is going to be discussing this as well. Okay, now, even though we're in a Mishnah, we are going to be moving topics. Okay, so we're shifting now to the mitzvahs of prika v'te'ina. There's a mitzvah of loading and there's a mitzvah of unloading. The Torah describes in two locations. One is in Shmos and Parshas Mishpatim, and the second time is in Parshas Kiseitse, found in Sefer Devarim. Okay, I'm just going to go through the Pesukim quickly right now, and then we'll see the Mishnah. First, the Pasuk in Mishpatim, Perichav Gimel Pasuk Ches, the Torah says, Kisira Chamor Son Acha Roveit Tachas Maso, if you see the donkey of your enemy. Later we'll discuss why the Torah illustrates the example of your enemy. So ki sira chamor son echa rovetz, enemy, not the best translation, meaning somebody you strongly dislike. Okay, enemy. I don't like that translation. Anyway, ki sira chamor son echa rovetz tachas masof. You see the donkey of your sone, who is right now rovit tachas maso, basically squatting underneath the load, the chaldatam azov lo, and you will stop from helping him, meaning the Torah is about to tell you, don't think that, don't do that, azov to azov imo, you must help him. Okay, that is the pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim. Now I'll turn to the pasuk in Parshas Dvarim. Lo sira es chamor achicha o sharo no flim baderech. Do not see the donkey of your friend. Here in Dvarim, by the way, it's your friend. O sharo no flim baderech. Fallen on the way. V'salamta mehem. And you're going to cover your eyes from it. Hakim takimimo. You should help him out. I will say this at this juncture. There are two pasukim. One's talking about loading and the other pasuk is talking about unloading. If I were to press you, which the Gemara later on is going to do, and I told you which pasuk is talking about loading and which pasuk is talking about unloading, you can make an argument, but it's not absolutely compelling in the Torah which pasuk is talking about loading the animal and which pasuk is talking about unloading the animal. Again, you can make an argument, and we're going to do so in just a moment. But the psukim themselves don't use the terms of te'ina, loading, or prika, or unloading. In other words, those are terms that we're going to be using a lot in the course of this conversation, this course of this discussion. But in the psukim themselves, it's not abundantly clear which pasuk is referencing which. Okay, stay tuned. We're going to come back to that point. We are in the Mishnah, in the middle of Lamed Beis, Lamed Aleph. We're right in the middle of the Mishnah, as now we turn to the topic of Prika V'Te'ina. And the Mishnah says, Parv V'Tan, Afilo Arba V'Chamisha Pamim, Chayev. Let's say that the unloaded the animal, and you help the animal load again. The animal's unloaded, you help the animal load again, and you keep going back and helping him. So, and there is still a constant mitzvah to help, even though you've done it already. Shenamar azov tazov. And because the Torah says that you should help, and you should help, the double language. We just did this in the Gemara the other day about the double language of the Torah. Halach v'yashav lova amar hova alecha mitzvah im ritzon chalif rok prok. So let's say now, the owner of the animal, it needs help unloading. And so you are now bound by the Torah to help him. So you go and help him. And now the owner of the animal says, you know what, you're doing such a great job. And he goes and he sits down and he helps himself to a iced tea. Right. And he says, look, you're doing such a good job. I commend you on the job that you're doing. Fantastic. So at that point in time, you are, says the Mishnah, Pater. You don't have to help him. Meaning that if the owner of the animal himself is unwilling to unload the animal by himself, so at that point in time, you don't have, with simple pshat in the Mishnah, you no longer have an obligation to help him. Shenamar imo. Because the Torah says that you must help him. Meaning with him. He has to be a participant in the act of unloading. Now let's say the person's just simply unable. He's either old, he is sick, so then you have a mitzvah. In other words, he'd like to help you, he's just simply not physically in a position to do so. Mitzvah min haTorah lifrok avalod liton. Then the Mishnah says something which is almost impossible to understand. The Mishnah says there's a mitzvah in the Torah to unload, but there is no mitzvah in the Torah to load the animal. Okay? As we already pointed out in the introduction, there are two psukim in the Torah. So what does the Mishnah mean when the Mishnah says that there is no mitzvah to help somebody load? Stay tuned, we're going to discuss that. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Aflaton, Rabbi Shimon says, no, there's a mitzvah for both, loading and unloading. Rabbi Yosef Glila Omer, Im Hayalav Yosef Amaso, In Zakuklo. Let's say what the owner of the animal did is that he loaded the animal and it went beyond the limit. Right, every time you go into an elevator, there's a number posted on the elevator in terms of what its maximum capacity is. And so let's say you loaded the animal above, beyond maximum capacity. So then, according to Rav Yosef Lili, you no longer have a mitzvah. Why? Shenemar tachas maso, maso she'achol amod bo. Because the Torah says tachas maso, meaning that the animal was all loaded only up to capacity. Once the animal is loaded above capacity, you no longer have a mitzvah to help him out. Okay, again, much to discuss over here. There's a lot going on. Let us start with the Gemara. Now, remember, there were two parts to the Mishnah. Part one of the Mishnah was a conclusion of the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. Part two is Prika Vatina. So as we go through the Gemara, you know, we always do this Keseder. We're first going to attack the first part of the Mishnah. We return back to the first part of the Mishnah. Amarava, Refish Amru. Now, we talked about a barn, finding an animal in the barn. It can't be that we're talking about just a regular barn where the doors are closed. Obviously, there's no mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. The animal is in a guarded scenario. So Rava provides the proper context of the Mishnah. Amar Rava. Refesh Amar Eino Matev Eino Mishameres. We're not talking about where the barn is totally Matev. This would mislead the animal. And the barn, at the same time, the barn is not totally Mishameres. Rashi describes, we're basically, it has some sort of semblance of a barn, but the door's not closed. Meaning, if the animal wanted to exit, the animal could exit. So, and Rava says, and how do I know this? Because look at the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Eino chayav ba. Because the Mishnah is not, if the barn was had no semblance of a barn whatsoever, so then the Mishnah says, well, you don't have to worry about the animal. No, if the barn had no semblance of a barn whatsoever, and the animal really does not have any idea that's in some sort of enclosed facility, so then of course you have to help and return the animal to its owner. And the Mishnah says, Ein chayav, but you're not obligated. Well, that can't be. So, Ein mishameres, but on the other hand, the animal is not fully enclosed because the fact that the Mishnah has says that you're not obligated, the Mishnah is providing a chiddush. What's the chiddush? The chiddush is that basically it is penned up. If it wants to escape, it could, but basically it's penned up. Under those circumstances, you're not obligated. Because look, consider. If let's say the animal was perfectly penned up, look, if you find the animal just outside of the pen, what's your obligation? Like we discussed the other day, you got to take the animal and bring it from the outside inside the pen. And you're done. Meaning, and you fulfilled your mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. Remember, unlike a ganav, where the ganav has to notify the owner that I returned your stolen item, by the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda, there's no such requirement. You just simply have to physically return the animal back to its pen. And you fulfill the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda with no notification to the owner. So the Gemara now is making a very compelling argument. If that's enough to fulfill the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda, if the animal were inside the pen and the pen is fully closed up, so then obviously there is no mitzvah whatsoever. So by virtue of the fact that the Mishnah says ein chayav ba, well, you're not obligated, it means that there is some semblance of this idea that the animal could escape, which means that the door is open. So it means that the animal's penned up, but there's a door and the door is open, and even though the animal could get out, you're not chayav in doing anything beyond that. Now we're talking about a barn. Where is this barn situated? That's the next discussion of the Gemara. So we're going to have two versions of Rav Yitzchak. Version number one. So the barn is within Tchum of the city. So that means that there's some sort of proximity of the barn to the owner of this animal. And so that's why you don't have to do anything more than that. Which means then that if the animal's wandering in the street, but not out in the middle of nowhere, outside the city, even within Tchum, the animal is considered lost. And therefore you have a mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. That is version number one. Now, the version number two takes us in the other direction. When the animal is wandering the streets, considered lost, but only outside of Tchum. Now, which means then that if the animal's in a barn, even if that barn is outside of Tchum, you don't have an obligation to return the animal. The animal's not considered lost, and you don't have to return it. So in version number two, once the animal's in a barn, you no longer have a mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda, even if the barn is outside of Tchum. So there are two versions of Rav Yitzchak. In version number one, the animal is only considered safe if it's in a barn within Tchum. In version number two, the animal is considered safe if it's in a barn, even if that barn is outside of Tchum. Yeah.
Earlier that even for potential property damage, it's supposed to prevent that from happening.
Right.
Maybe you have a pen that's open and the cow could escape. So why aren't you obligated to close it?
Right. So, in other words, should you close it? Yes. But are you obligated to close it? No. In other words, as long as the animal has some sort of contained sense of containment, so that would be enough. Meaning, the Mishnah's point is simply that you're not obligated. In other words, but there. Obviously, the Mishnah is speaking to the idea that you're not obligated, but in other words, it's a chiddush that there's some idea that you might have thought that you should be doing something. But this is a kavrasa l'itamalah. Okay, the Gemara now discusses the following. The Mishnah brings in the predicament in which you are a kohen who is not allowed to go into a cemetery. On the other hand, there's a lost item in the cemetery. Now, we're moving on to the next point of the Mishnah, which is, what if your father instructs you to do otherwise? You don't listen to your father. And this is the classic Gemara now detailing what exactly happens when you have a terrible dilemma in which dad instructs you to violate the Torah. On the other hand, the Torah tells you, obviously, not to do that. So, how do I know that the mitzvah is going to trump the instruction of the father? Shene'emar. So the Gemara quotes a drasha. This is very interesting. Meaning that a person is obligated to fear his parents and honor their commands, but at the same time, there's Shabbos. And Ani Hashem, meaning that Shabbos is going to be overarching over than that of the instruction of your parent. So basically, the drasha is coming to teach me that your obligation to listen to your parent is going to be secondary to the mitzvahs of the Torah. Now the Gemara says, now wait one second. Time of the Kutzer Rechman and Shabbos Sosai Tishmaru, Halav Hachi Havamina Tzaisilei. Without the drasha, we would have had a Havamina that you should listen to your parent over than that of a mitzvah of the Torah. The Gemara says, "V'amai," but the Gemara says, "But I don't understand." In this particular scenario, "Hayase v'haylosa sevase." The Gemara says, "Let's consider the mitzvah of listening to your parents is a mitzvah sase. It's a positive commandment. Keep it aveim. Right? Your father gives you instruction. Your mother gives you instruction. You have to listen." And now let's talk about the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. The mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda is twofold. It's the mitzvah asay, it's a positive commandment of returning the lost item, and it's a los asay. Meaning, and on top of that, it's also a negative prohibition of lo hisalein. You're not allowed to close your eyes. So, velo asay asay, vedachis los asay vasay. So, the mitzvah of kibbut aveim, when distilled, it really is just a positive commandment. On the other hand, the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda is both a positive commandment, negative prohibition. So, if I put the two side by side, I never would have entertained the idea that the mitzvah of Kibbut Aveim should outweigh the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. Again, when you break it down, the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda has two. Asay and Losa, saying the mitzvah of Kibbut Aveim is only one, and that's the mitzvah Sasei. So the Gemara says, it's Derech. So the Gemara says, no. Even if it were distilled down to this, I still would have entertained the idea that I should be listening to the parent. Why? Because the Gemara says, I might have thought as follows. The mitzvah of Kibbut Aveim is a super Asay. Again, my terminology. It's a super mitzvah sasei. We know that to a certain degree, to a certain sense, the Torah equates and compares your parent to that of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Right? You'll see this in the Gemara in Kiddushin and Chavtes, Lamed, Lamed Aleph, where the Torah says that there are three partners in the creation of a person. Your two parents and a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Right, and so therefore there may be an equivalency. This is a havamina. There may be an equivalency to that of the instruction of a parent to that of the instruction of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And in this havamina, I might have thought that once your parents give you instruction, it's ki'ilu as important, as binding as that of an instruction given by the Torah by Kadosh Baruch Hu. And that's why I might have thought as a havamina that we should be listening to the parent above and beyond that which the Torah says. That's the havamina. So therefore, hilkach litzayisle, I might have thought you should listen to him, kamash malan to lishmalei. And that's why the Torah needs a special drasha to tell me that no, that even though you might have constructed such an argument, the argument is going to be upended by the pasuk in the Torah.
I find it interesting that they changed the order of the Ten Commandments.
What?
Sabbath is first, but it's written here.
No, but this is a different pasuk, though.
No, I know, but the understanding of the commandments is Sabbath is first, then honor.
Right, okay. Good. Right. It's true. Right, okay. Correct. In other words, the havamina of the Gemara is to still. It's still a struggle to understand it, but okay, the Gemara did entertain it. Okay, Adkan, that takes us to the end of the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda in the Gemara, and now we turn all of our attention from here on end, the mitzvah of Tina Prika, loading and unloading. The Gemara goes on to discuss. Mitzvah min haTorah lifrok aval lo litan. Now, the Mishnah made a statement, which is that there's a mitzvah in the Torah to unload, but not to load. Now, the Gemara says, what does that mean? Gemara says, I don't understand. As I explained back in the introduction to the Mishnah, there are two pesukim in the Torah. One pesuk in the Torah says you have to help, and the other one says that you have to help. And again, right now, the assumption is one pesuk is talking about loading, and the other pesuk is talking about unloading. Ella. So the Gemara says, fine. Mitzvah min haTorah lifrok bechinam v'lo liton bechinam. Ella b'schar. The Gemara now explains the Mishnah. Here is what we mean. In the Mishnah, there is a mitzvah in the Torah to unload an animal, and that mitzvah is bechinam, meaning you have no right to charge for that mitzvah. You must do that mitzvah even pro bono. V'lo liton. But when it comes to the mitzvah of loading an animal together with its owner, so there's no expectation that you have to do that free of charge. you can charge for that service. Meaning, yes, there's a mitzvah, but also there's an expectation that right now you want help loading the animal. Okay, fine, but it's going to demand time, my time. And as for reasons which we're about to articulate, I'm not compelled right now to do it.
Because we're not doing anything for the animal.
Right. Like, correct. Correct. So, Ela B'Schar. So, according to the Tanna Kamma, I therefore have a right to demand payment for the mitzvah of helping you load your animal.
Right. Are there any similar mitzvahs in the Torah that have a payment attached to it?
Well, Hashavas Aveda, as we just learned also, has this idea that there's some sort of expectation of remuneration. Right. But over here, however, at... Even though we just learned that, to get, you know, side by side with Prikut Te'ina, can make a very simple distinction. Now, Shavas Aveda, you're going to get some sort of nominal payment. Here, there's some basic expectation that, you know, you want me to help you load your animal, you want me to help you load your car, fine, but it's a job.
Right.
Rabbi Shimon Omer Afleton Bechinam. Now, Rabbi Shimon says, no, even loading the animal is expected to be done with no charge. That's the machlokus in the Mishnah. But in other words, we're not questioning whether there is or there isn't a mitzvah. Of course there's a mitzvah to do both. The only discussion and debate in the Mishnah is whether or not there can be an expectation of getting paid to do that job. Tanin Alad, Tanu Rabbanan, and the Gemara now is going to quote a brisa that's going to complement exactly what we just said. Prika Bechinam Tina Beschar. According to the Tanna Kamma, unloading you have to do free of charge. Loading you have to do, but you can expect to get paid. Rabbi Shimon Amar, Zuvazu Bechinam, and Rabbi Shimon says both are to be done with free of charge. Okay, so good. So the brisa, exactly how we said the Pshat in the Mishnah, the brisa is a perfect complement to that point. And now, from this point going forward, let's go over the arguments. Meaning, now that we know the machlokas is talking about, let's understand a little bit better what is the underpinnings of this machlokas. The Gemara goes on to explain. My time at the Rabban Rabbi Shimon Lichter Rechmanatina Velo Bai Prika. So the Gemara says, here's the argument for the Chachamim. If the Torah wanted to be a little bit more conservationist in terms of the psukim, so just simply tell me that there is a mitzvah to load, and I obviously would then know that there's a mitzvah to unload. Because consider that when I'm helping load a person's animal, so there is no pain to the animal, meaning, in fact, just the opposite. I'm loading the animal. I mean, if anything, I'm causing pain. But I am not relieving the animal from any pain, and there's no chisar and kiss, there's also no loss of money. Meaning that if the animal is laden with weight on it, and you don't help him unload, so the animal could break. The animal could, you know, a leg could break, the animal could get injured. Over here, we're talking about loading the animal. So over here, there's no tzar bale chayim and there's no chisar and kiss. And chayav, and yet the Torah requires me to help my friend load his animal. Now, if there's a mitzvah to load, so then the Gemara says you can make a very easy kavachomer using the two arguments of tzar bale chayim and chisar and kiss. Well, if there's a mitzvah to load, there for sure is a mitzvah to unload as well. So the reason why the Torah goes out of its way to write these two psukim is to come to tell me that even though the Torah didn't have to write both, the Torah did write both, and it's there to teach me that the mitzvah of loading is at a cost, meaning I can't expect to get paid. The mitzvah of unloading is afilu bechinam. That is the opinion of the Tanna Kamma. Rabbi Shimon, my time, mishum de lo mesayim ekra. Now, as far as Rabbi Shimon is concerned, Rabbi Shimon, in theory, loves the argument. But practically speaking, when Rabbi Shimon looks at the two psukim, Rabbi Shimon is not sure which mitzvah is talking about prikim, which mitzvah is talking about te'ina. And that's why the Torah has to write two psukim, because had it only been one pasuk, I'm not sure if the mitzvah in the Torah is either prika or te'ina. And if the Torah only wrote one pasuk, so then the outstanding argument would be, well, obviously the Torah is talking about unloading. Because which is more compelling?
Right.
The more compelling mitzvah is the animal is right now saddled with a burden, and you're there to ease the burden of the animal. So because we are unclear which pasuk is talking about which, the Torah therefore has to write two psukim that we know that there's both a mitzvah of prika te'ina. Now again, let's turn back to the psukim one more time. I quoted the psukim earlier, but let's turn back to that. In other words, how can we not know which pasuk is talking about which? I'm going to go back to Parshas Mishpatim. Perichav Gimel and Sefer Shmos, Pasuk Hei. The Torah says, Kisera chamor sonecha rovetz tachas maso. Seems pretty clear over there. Right? The animal right now is basically crouched underneath the burden. V'chaltaltam yazov lo, azov ta'azov imo, help him. Pretty clear that it's talking about unloading. Look at the. I'm going to now turn to the attention in pasuk in Dvarim Parshas Kiseitze, Perichav Beis Pasuk Dalid, Lo Siras Chamor Achicha Osharo No Flim Baderech. There it's not
overloaded.
All right, so right, exactly. In other words,
maybe No Flim is
No Flim is referencing like, what
the
animal.
Load.
All right, the burden itself unclear. V'salamta mehem hakim takimimo. You gotta help him. Okay, admittedly, that pasuk is not as clear as the one in Parshas Mishpatim. And Rabbi Shimon now makes exactly that point. Virabanan.
He would have said no fail if it were done by the animal.
Right, right.
See, it's a no flim,
right.
The objects.
Good. Okay, very good. Virabanan. Amayla Masamikra. So now we're back in the Gemara. We're on the very bottom of Lamed Beis Amud Aleph. And the Gemara now basically says, here's what the Chachamim are going to argue. How can you tell me that we don't know which pasuk is referencing what? Hachaksiv rovetz tachas maso. In Parshas Mishpatim, the Torah says, the animal is crouched under the burden. Meaning that the animal has weight on it. And your obligation now is to help the owner unload the animal. Hasam ksiv noflim baderech. Deramu inhu vitanaihu ba'orcha. What happened is that he and the load are right now on the road, meaning both the animal and the load are on the road. They're both on the road. And what your obligation now is to help him take the load and put it on top of the animal. Now, for Rabbi Shimon, what Rabbi Shimon would say in arguing that point is, no flim baderech, inu vitu'unaihu ilavaihu mashma. No. What the Torah is describing is that the animal, with the load on top of the animal, fell down on the road, but the load is still on top of the animal. That's what the Torah is describing. Or at least that's what the Torah could be describing. So Rabbi Shimon will argue, I'm still unclear which pasuk is describing which mitzvah of Tehin or Prika. Okay, Amar Rava. We're now on the very top of Amud Beis, and here comes now one of the more classic discussions in the Gemara, and that is the following. You will hear the term used all the time in the Gemara, and that's this term of Tsar Balei Chaim. Right? Are we prohibited by the Torah to cause undue pain and suffering to an animal? Now, please understand, by the way, that we're talking now about undue pain and suffering, meaning, obviously, where the Torah allows us to eat an animal, which means that we're allowed to kill an animal. Okay, if right. Obviously, if there is a mitzvah of Tsar Balei Chaim, so then how can you shecht an animal? One time a year, we're told to take an animal and throw it off a cliff. Now, that seems to be very painful. So again, even in the context of this discussion that we're going to have in the Gemara, we're only talking about undue pain and suffering, meaning something that is just simply gratuitous. And the discussion that we're going to have in the Gemara right now is this idea of Tsar Balei Chaim. Is that an Isser in the Torah, or is that an Isser Midrabanan? As you probably heard before, but it's accurate, there's nowhere in the Torah where the Torah says very clearly, don't cause undue pain and suffering to an animal. It doesn't say that. And what we're going to do now is, over the course of this Amud, tomorrow's Daf, is that we're going to try to extract the idea from various mitzvahs and Yisurim in the Torah. And here we begin.
How about from the Pesach, Shemaz? He says, why do you have to unload it?
Okay, good. So the Gemara starts off with its first argument. There are going to be a lot of arguments coming up. So the first argument of the Gemara is, I know it's a din d'oraisa. Of course it is. Because look, we just had in the Gemara a kal v'chomer that if there's a mitzvah to load, well, for sure there's going to be a mitzvah to unload. And why? Because Tsar Balei Chaim. If we are constructing a kal v'chomer which operates on a d'oraisa level, obviously the argument being used to construct that kal v'chomer, which is Tsar Balei Chaim, must be operating on a d'oraisa level. And even Rabbi Shimon, who was unsure, his only uncertainty was which pasuk is referencing what. had he known which pasuk was referencing what, he also would have gone with the kal v'chomer. That's the first argument of the Gemara. So the Gemara says, "Neil matzar ba lechem darais of a filler." Rabbi Shimon lo kamer la mishum delo mesami kra. Ava mesami kra darshin and kal v'chomer. Gemara makes exactly this point. Even Rabbi Shimon was ready to make the kal v'chomer. The only impediment was he wasn't sure. So my love, Mishum Tzar Balei Chaim Darshinan. The Gemara says, now what is the argument? The argument Tzar Balei Chaim. The Gemara says, wait 1 second, slow down. Mishum Dikis Chisaron Kis. Well, the Gemara says, remember, there were two arguments. One was Tzar Balei Chaim. The other one is the animal may break, and the owner of the animal may suffer a financial loss. Maybe it's financial loss which was really the compelling argument. The Gemara says, Umati Nedleis Bechisaron Kis Chayav Prikadis Bechisaron Kis Lo Kol Shekain. The Gemara says, "Utiina in bachisaron kislo amilo askinan da dahachi vahachi bato mishuke inami asugan veveshakle komadiika bahadei." The Gemara says, "No, chisaron kis is not a compelling argument. I'll tell you why, because even if it was an issue of loading the animal, there could still be financial loss. Consider, right now he's got to make it to the market on time. So right now, if you don't help him load, he's not going to make it to the market on time. That's chisaron kis. Or consider.
But that's grama.
Yeah, okay, good. The Gemara is right now just making a lot of arguments. So you can argue the arguments of the Gemara. But right now, the Gemara is just making the arguments. Two, consider. If we just stand around right now, out here in the street, so and you don't help me load the animal, so somebody can come and steal the animal. So that's also chisaron kis. So chisaron kis right now, if that were the only argument of the Gemara says that's not compelling. Tzar Balei Chaim, however, that is compelling. Meaning the animal is not loaded yet, there's no Tzar Balei Chaim. The animal is already loaded, and you need to unburden the animal, that's Tzar Balei Chaim. So the Gemara says, okay, so that could be a solid argument that you see there's a mitzvah of Tzar Balei Chaim, a concept of it in the Torah, from the fact that you see both Tanaim were ready to make the Kal V'chomer. Two, Teda Tzar Balei Chaim Daraisa Diktani Sefer Rav Yosef Galil Omri Maya Lav Yoser Ama Soin Zakuk Lo. So the Gemara says, let's think about the opinion of Rav Yosef Galili. Let's say the animal was overburdened, right, beyond maximum capacity. So he says, you don't have to help. Now, we don't know this in the Mishnah, but it's implied that Rav Yosef Galili is arguing with a unstated, assumed position, which is that the Tanakhama argues. And the Tanakhama says, no, even if the animal is above maximum capacity, you still have to help the owner. Why do you have to help the owner? My time, Allah Mishum Tzar Balei Chaim Daraisa. So the Tanakhama is arguing with Rav Yosef Galili, obviously is of the opinion, I don't care that the owner was grossly negligent. If the animal is burdened, overburdened, you got to help him. So the Gemara says, no. Dilma betachas maso pligi. The Gemara says, again, if that's the only reason why they're arguing, there could be another reason why they're arguing, and that could be a question of how to darshan the psukim. The Rabbi Yossi savor darshinan tachas maso masu shechalam odbav rabbanan savor lo darshinan tachas maso. It could very well be that they're arguing how to darshan this pasuk. Teda. The Gemara now is going to give a third argument. Tzar Balei Chaim lav de araisa. In fact, if you look at our Mishnah, I can make an argument that that this idea of Tzar Balei Chaim is not a din daraisa. Why? De tani reisha alach v'yashav lo v'amr lo ho. Because remember what we learned back in the Mishnah? Let's say the owner of the animal says, you know, you're doing such a wonderful job, right? I'll tell you what, you're doing a great job, and I will sit by and I will cheer you on. So the Mishnah says at that point in time you're not obligated, because he has to participate in the unloading in order for you to be obligated. Now, if Tzar Balei Chaim was a dinda araisa, so this shouldn't matter whether or not the owner wants to help or not. The animal's suffering. You have to relieve the animal of its suffering. So if Tzar Balei Chaim was a daraisa, so granted that the owner right now is thoughtless and careless, but you got to help the animal, shouldn't you? So the Gemara says it shouldn't make a difference. It clearly in the Mishnah does. Tzar Balei Chaim must not be daraisa. So the Gemara says that's not enough of an argument. So the Gemara says, well, you may have misunderstood the Mishnah. Chayv and Pater over here doesn't mean whether or not you should or should not be unloading the animal. You should be unloading the animal under either circumstance, whether with or without the help of the owner. Now it's just a question of, can I demand payment? If the owner is helping, if he's participating, I can't demand payment. If the owner wants to now sit on the sideline and cheer you on, now you can demand payment. V'hachi kamar, and that's pshat in the Mishnah. Rachmana kisei lamare ba'adei avagabei bechinam. So the Gemara says we can make the argument that Tzar Bala Chaim is a din daraisa, and you got to help with or without participation of the owner, and the only distinction is whether or not you can demand payment, yes or no. That could be the pshat in the Mishnah. And so far what we have are two arguments in the Mishnah that Tzar Bala Chaim is daraisa, one argument that Tzar Bala Chaim is not daraisa, but even in every argument there are still counter arguments that exist. This argument will continue tomorrow on Shabbos. We're going to continue discussing whether or not the idea of Tzar Bala Chaim is a din daraisa or a din darabanan. We continue tomorrow.